Hello, my name is Charles Goldfarb, and I'm joined by my co-host Alexander Aleem for the AOA podcast, Lessons in Orthopedic Leadership. This podcast has been organized to openly discuss how programs are planning to support medical student applications for orthopedic surgery residency during the COVID-19 pandemic. The AOA has taken a central role in facilitating discussion, primarily through the CORD conferences. A recent CORD webinar was led by Cassandra Lee, who is gracious enough to join Alexander and myself today to dive deeper into the topic. We plan to discuss some best practices regarding how programs are exposing students to their residency programs, how some are planning to handle applications, and what interview days might look like. We hope this program is of interest to students, current trainees, and various orthopedic programs and residency and fellowship leaders. So let's get to it. We are incredibly pleased to welcome Cassandra Lee to the podcast. Cassandra did undergraduate and medical school at Boston University, residency at Wake Forest, and a sports medicine fellowship at Washington University. She's been at the University of California, Davis since that time and is an associate professor of orthopedic surgery. She is the residency program director, and she is the chief of the sports service. Welcome, Dr. Lee.
Thanks, Chuck. Happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much, Cassandra. Really happy to have you. That webinar was great. Tons of great resources, especially for programs kind of trying to figure out how to navigate this totally new system. I think we're spending most of the time talking about the interview process, but maybe let's kind of go back and talk a little bit about the recruitment sort of process in terms of virtual rotations. Most programs kind of have had some time to get some done. What have you seen as successes, maybe some challenges, and what's been your experience with virtual rotation so far?
I think so far, most people have been trying to do some kind of a virtual AI, if you will. So whether that be nothing more than, say, a month or so, like what you're doing typically when you're doing it in person. So probably like a 1 to 2 week rotation, understanding that this is not necessarily going to be a required time to be there because you don't want to interfere with the student's normal rotation they have at their home hospital or home program. So I think, you know, checking in, trying to get a little bit of the flavor of the program, but also kind of, I think the biggest thing that the students really want to do is interact and see what the residents are like. So having potentially like a virtual happy hour, virtual social hour, something to that effect, I think has been really effective. Our medical center actually put together a specifically a diversity open house. It was put together by the entire medical center. And I think we had well over 300 participants from around the country just kind of popping in to see what our university is trying to do for in terms of diversity and recruitment, but also there is, you know, 2 hours or 3 hours of popping into different rooms, if you will, where you can meet and greet and learn about programs. So we had at our time slot, we had our program, I think anesthesia, and maybe two or three other programs at the same time.
It's been interesting for me to watch because what it seems the traditional away rotation has value both in the students understanding the various programs, and of course that's a very limited number of programs where they can do an away rotation, and also the programs having a good ability to really look deep into different students. In this current virtual rotation setting, to me it seems like the students are the ones who are really getting a sense of the program, and the programs may be less able to discern the qualities of a student. Is that what you've seen, Cassandra?
Yeah, I think that right now it's definitely advantageous for the students. So I think for our virtual rotations, and you can tell me what's going on at WashU, but after each 2 week block, if you will, I am the associate program director. We actually go ahead and try to do exit interviews and try to answer any questions that may not be necessarily something they can get from our virtual program.
Yeah, that's kind of been our experience as well. We've done a 1 week type rotation where students can kind of come in and get various experiences through education conference, get that Q&A time with the residents, which I think they really crave. And that's been the feedback that we've gotten is more FaceTime with residents if possible, because I think that's what you do when you're on your away rotation is you get the pulse of the residents, less so than the faculty. And then Dr. Sandy Klein, who is our program director, myself, as well as either our chair or Dr. Goldfarb will have exit interviews as well. So I think really trying to be conscious about getting that is important. What has been your role with social media? Because that's another area in which we potentially can try to get to students that maybe we haven't done before with recruitment.
Yeah, I think social media can be a curse and a blessing every way you look at it, which we kind of had an idea before the COVID-19 pandemic, but now it's kind of, if anything, it's more of a blessing than the prior curse, right? So I think between Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and everything in between, Facebook Live events, I know different programs have been trying to coordinate like Facebook Live events where you can get a chance to meet the program and kind of interact and chat. Instagram, you can use Instagram stories and potentially showcase your students from your program to get them out there. I know there's been a lot of kind of connections between Twitter. That's where I typically have seen stuff because that's my social media of choice, if you will, for work stuff. Certainly all the different platforms have the ability to kind of allow people to jump in.
Yeah, it is a reframing of exposures. And once you get old like me, I think, and I am on Twitter, but it really is it's almost the dawn of a new era where social media is taking on an increased importance to exposure, and how you put your program out there in social media, I think, matters more today than it's ever mattered before.
Agreed.
Do you see any of these virtual rotations, social media recruitment, assuming next year is sort of back to normal business, as we would say, with away rotations being back established if the pandemic's under control, do you see a role for these virtual rotations still in orthopedic recruitment?
I think that's a really good question, right? I think, like anything that we see, this is definitely a new experience for all of us. And I think there certainly are some positives out of this. Maybe I'm being optimistic, but I think I can actually see a role for having a virtual kind of rotations in addition to the actual AIs when that opens back up. The tricky part is, the reality is, if you're going to be doing a true AI, I mean, that's your 4 weeks that you are completely dedicated, ingrained, and, you know, sucked into that culture. So are you going to have that 2-hour time point that you can go pop out and go see a virtual lecture and kind of get a feel of another program? Probably not, but I'd like to think that there's some positives out of this, and I think there's something that we can certainly gain out of this kind of chaos, if you will, that we've been dealing with.
Yeah, I agree. It is a really interesting question, and I'm in agreement. I think the pieces of this may stick around because only a certain number of students will be able to rotate at a certain number of institutions, and it's for those other students who either are having a hard time deciding where they want to, you know, may prioritize visiting. It really does give students a bit more than those same students would get on an interview day. So I think it's exciting.
If you can almost come up with your virtual, I guess, engagement, whatever event, almost at the end of the third year, but before the sub-I season, it almost kind of gives some students maybe an idea of where they do want to actually rotate and spend their AIs. So I think there is room for it. I'm going to actually do a little plug that I heard from the OB-GYN program at our university. They actually have this app where it's actually like divided like a house. So it's almost like the, you know, OB-GYN department has a house, and then each room is going to have something in there. So in terms of the program director or maybe research, or each of the PG classes are represented in each of the house. And then it's almost like an open house where you can actually go and visit and see a little video blurb about, what's my life like? Why did I choose UC Davis and whatnot? But then also, like, on a specific day, you can actually interact. So it's almost like a true literal open house.
I can never be smart enough to come up with ideas like that, but that is genius. I love that.
Yeah. We may steal that if there's no copyright on that. But I agree too. I think the really interesting question is going to be, once we can allow away students to come back, because that's such a big part of sort of what we consider in orthopedic recruitment. I still think these virtual platforms play a role. And I think they're, whether it's, do you do it as a pre, before the sub-I kind of season opens. And I remember just in advising our medical students, you know, when that April 1st or 15th date opens, I mean, they're all scrambling to send out their applications immediately. So there is going to be some timing associated with that. Or is it something where, you know, if it's a program that you may not be able to get to because of travel. And a lot of us pick our rotations because we have a friend whose couch we can crash on for a month, not necessarily, you know, the program that we want to go to. And so maybe you can get a bit different exposure there. There's a lot of positives, I think, coming from this in terms of giving students more power in terms of the programs that they want to sort of look at and allowing them to, I think, dictate that a little bit better.
I guess we will see.
Cassandra, do you think this interview season, certainly it's going to be a lot less expensive for the applicants, I wonder how, and I'm sure it's been talked about a fair amount, I wonder how it levels the playing field. I'm sure a fair amount, giving more access to each of the applicants rather than those that can afford to go all over the country.
Yeah, I think it's definitely for the advantage of the student because, you know, with the AOA putting out that spreadsheet about programs trying to tell you what days we're going to be doing interviews and when, it almost kind of gives you an idea of like how to kind of schedule your life, really. So, and this is potentially you're able to actually interview an East Coast program in the morning and then maybe a West Coast program in the evening. I mean, it's kind of a great situation.
Yeah, it's going to be, on the flip side, it might be challenging for programs because one of the natural sort of elimination is you have two interviews on the same day. And then if you've got a competitive group of applicants, they have to choose one. Now they might be able to choose both, and that may actually eliminate a potentially good student, and we all may interview the same 60 people. I think that's a concern that's going around if we make it almost too accessible. So it's really, what do you think about that? Should there be a cap that we put on students?
I don't think that's fair to put a cap on students because, I mean, this is such a terrifying, nerve-wracking, horrible time in your life, but yet super exciting, right? So I think, if anything, the advantage definitely is with the students. I think the worry is amongst the programs as to, yes, we may be interviewing the same applicant. So I think the tough part is how are we going to get through these applications and really see the different applicants? But the other part of it is, yeah, certainly this is probably slanted to be at the advantage of the student.
So we've obviously transitioned talking into the interview process, which is an even more complex discussion than the virtual experiences. So maybe start with timing of applications and figuring things out. So share with us what you know about this, please.
Okay. So timing-wise, the application deadline has been pushed back, right? So it should be October 22nd is when programs can actually start looking at applications. So at the webinar that we had, we were trying to figure out a universal coordinated offer day, if you will. So there we put out three dates. We still don't have consensus yet, but certainly it's going to be towards the end of November, the last three Mondays in November, and then trying to figure out which date would be best for a concerted kind of coordinated event. But if you realize, then that puts us roughly at a month to go through all these applications, but try to get your application offer list and get that all coordinated. That is an incredible amount of work I think the programs are going to have to do. And I think we've already started discussing this, like, you know, trying to figure out timing and understanding when our education committee meets and try to figure out like which dates we need to have. You know, we're kind of counting down exactly where, you know, what's our absolute drop dead date, you know? So it's one of those, it's going to be a little rough on the programs, I think.
You know, normally we start seeing applications kind of filter in around now. Mid-September, and it's a whole month that we don't have that ability because we're not even able to see them, because before we could see them before it was complete and we could kind of do some of our filters. The big question that I have is how much other faculty involvement that you have. Obviously, you and your associate program director, some of the education office, leadership, but at our place, a lot of times we have other faculty also review applications and kind of help screen. With that shortened timeline, does that put more pressure on the program directors to then sort of share the bulk of that load, because trying to get faculty to maybe turn around 20 applications in a week is a big ask? Or do you kind of have to sort of rally the troops, so to say, and say, hey, it's going to be a lot of work. We're all in this together, but we got to get through this.
I guess there's going to be a lot of bribing. I'm just kidding. So the interesting thing is I know how hard it is to rally the faculty, right? It's like we're all dedicated into teaching residents. And even then, it's even hard to rally faculty to get evaluations done on time, let alone get through all these applications on time. So the interesting thing is what we've actually done in this past year, we actually streamlined our kind of evaluation, I guess. Yeah, our evaluation, the way we did it, we actually pulled it away from the entire faculty because we did have problems with stragglers, and it was definitely more than one. So it was really difficult. So we actually tried to streamline it and actually change the way we looked at application to become a little more holistic. So ironically, we actually did the right thing a year before all this happened. So I think the education committee definitely knows that we're kind of under the gun, but at least it's a smaller group and we're able to kind of really have buy-in.
That's funny because we had the exact same conversation last year before this started too, about trying to almost, like you said, one, make sure we had a really holistic review, and two, really try to streamline it to make sure that we had a good number, and then the faculty that were involved, we didn't have to rely as much on that. So it's funny how that kind of worked out. We're doing the right thing with that.
And then again, we're gonna have to change everything anyway next year when step scores are gone. So
yeah,
might as well start now. Start looking at something more holistic.
Yeah, the volume of applications, and it makes the necessity of other faculty involvement, you know, it's just so incredibly important. And yet, you know, flexibility and just in general, the ability of faculty to find time in the COVID era is more challenging than ever. But obviously, you guys can't do it on your own. And so hopefully everyone, you know, realizes that and steps up. So what do both of you think about the effect of COVID on the number of interview days? And is there a trend nationally? Is that going to be something where there are fewer interview days by each program, potentially increased interview days, or maybe people stay the same?
So I think my two cents is that if we looked at, we actually set out that poll question specifically for that town hall. And I think at the time I was looking at the numbers we had, we only had like 18 programs had committed to that question. We didn't have the full one. I didn't look through the transcripts afterwards, but there looked like there was a trend of actually offering more interview dates, understanding that we're going to have a lot of technical difficulties, right? How many times have you gone into a WebEx or a Zoom and, you know, you're sitting there talking, you're muted, or something doesn't connect, you know, and it's nerve-wracking, definitely for the applicant, right? Because they're going to sit there like, oh my God, I'm on, but they can't hear me. Oh my God, the world's ending. So I think for technical issues and just the logistics of sitting through, trying to get coordinated with all the interviews that you were going to give, I think it's not unreasonable to actually offer more interview dates. But again, this goes back to, you're going to need your faculty buy-in. You're going to need, if you're doing more dates, that's more time away from clinical duties, more time away from clinical work. So I think for maybe larger programs or middle-sized programs, maybe that's not an issue, but for really small programs, that might be a big problem. So I think it's definitely going to be, it's going to be exhausting. So the question is, can you do a full day of back-to-back-to-back 48 interviews? Or sorry, 20 is impossible, 24 interviews in one day.
It's going to be hard because our situation was that we actually were planning on decreasing the number of interview days anyway before COVID. And we're going to try to keep that, knowing that it's going to be a marathon day for certain people, but it's actually maybe a shorter day for other faculty because probably less actual interview times per student. So total commitment's actually less, so we can kind of have two groups of faculty sort of go through that. So we looked at it that way, but I think the points, the technical aspects of this and the organizational aspects and the stress on our admin staff in our education office is going to be huge. And I cannot fathom what's going to happen if we have like an internet outage or, you know, a mass, you know, something happens to the whole server or something like that, because all of us are reviewing on the same day. It's kind of a doomsday situation. And the students, same thing. I mean, I've seen a lot of comments and questions about, you know, where can I set up to have a quiet room and making sure that I have a stable internet connection. I know a lot of schools are providing students with interview rooms on campus to help with that. And I think that's a great initiative, but the whole how many to do and is daunting. What about number of students? Are you going to, what about interview more, do you interview less? You talked about a more holistic approach to the review process. Obviously it takes more time. What do you think about number of students that you would interview this year?
So I think the interesting thing is we talked about within my own program, we are actually going to interview the same number of students on the same number of days. So we're just going to plow through it like we're doing this in person. So yeah, I mean, I think that's the question, but I think, you know, looking at how we polled for AOA, it looked like there was going to be more students interviewed and potentially more dates just because of that logistics of coordinating all the, you know, if you're not buying the package of that software, you know, where they have everything all set up, someone has to set up all these Zoom meetings. And that, I mean, that just sounds incredibly daunting.
So I don't know when sports interviews concluded last spring as COVID hit. But I know, Alexander, you and the shoulder service were on had a later interview scheduled date, and I know you did at least one virtual day. How did that go, and what did you learn from that experience?
It's surprisingly well, and I think the The difference is we interviewed 18 applicants for 2 fellowship spots in one day, as opposed to trying to interview, 80 to 100 for, 8 spots. But we had to, we were in the second to last week, I think, of the shoulder and elbow fellowship cycle. It was mid-March, kind of right when things were really kind of hitting in. And essentially, we said we can't force people to come here. It's totally unfair. So we did individual Zoom meetings. All 4 of the faculty sat in the room, socially distanced. We got one of those Oculus cameras that sort of flips around and looks at each person. And it was actually really good, because I think, especially for fellowship, with it being a smaller scale, it's a smaller number of faculty. I mean, we essentially asked the same questions to the applicants individually. So it makes sense to take 20 minutes of all 4 of us in a room together or in a virtual room together and ask those questions. And the student and the applicants actually said it went very well. I think we got a good feeling about the applicants. We basically did sort of the intro meeting with all of them in the beginning of the morning, and then set aside individual times. They had times to interact with our fellows, and the fellows put together like a little virtual hospital tour really quickly. So given that we had to throw it together in about a week, it went pretty well. But I think what we learned was it's got to be organized, and it's easy to organize it with a small scale, but we did learn that it can be done. And I think now everyone's super comfortable with it. We all know what our, virtual background is in Zoom, and we've all got our favorite room. I'm sitting in mine right now. Chuck has seen the back of this, my flower curtains and bookshelf, I think probably more than he ever wants to see, but it went well. And I think this year for us, I think Peds is going to be sort of our guinea pig, and Chuck, that's going to be you. So we'll look to see what happens.
Absolutely. Cassandra, have you had any experience doing interviews over Zoom, or this year will be it?
We had a PG1 spot that became, or actually a PG2 spot that became available mid-cycle. So we interviewed for a PG2 recruitment. And yeah, that was our first time going through it. And that was, we know what not to do. So that's good. But again, that was very much small scale. That was, I feel like there's maybe 10 to 15 applicants for the one spot that we're looking for. But we had a couple rounds of interviews from that. So we started off, the quick speed dating. And then once we figured out what we liked, which applicant would fit, then we kind of brought forth a more formal 30-minute interview type thing to really get to know them.
Are you going to change your structure of your interview, you think, for this year in terms of timing, number of interviewers in a room with an interviewee, resident only room, any kind of changes you're thinking about?
So I think we were trying to figure out how to still really give a taste of our program in terms of the flavor, the culture, because a lot of on the interview date, I know there's a lot of wasted time when they come in person, right? We're trying to figure out how to consolidate that and maybe make it better for the applicant. Because I think one of our strengths we do is when we have our kind of grand rounds, but I think a little bit of that was how well our faculty interact with the applicants and with students. And I think that's really hard to do on Zoom. So as of right now, I don't think we've technically committed to that same concept and same talk yet. I think dates wise, we're actually pretty similar to the old dates that we have, because we're just creatures of habit. So we couldn't quite get that out of our system. But then I think faculty wise, I think we basically have left it to, right now we're just trying to figure out how many faculty really want to be involved. And we're asking for the full commitment of, if you're going to do this, you have to do both days so that we can at least compare apples to apples. But this other part of this is we're going to mandate all our faculty to be actually in the academic office, so that we're going to put everyone in offices together so that there's no weird, I can't hear you, can you hear me? The usual Zoom isms. Right. So we want to try to eliminate that factor and try to get rid of the internet variability factor. So, barring any major system that goes down, kind of like what happened here in California with the first day of school, I think, oh God, I feel so bad for people who have first graders or fifth graders. And I think the internet went down that first day they had school. So that's always a potential, right? So everything we know that no matter how much we plan, there's always going to be something that's going to be fun.
Well, this has been an absolutely great discussion, and we can clearly talk about this for a lot longer. We're going to actually break this into 2 episodes, so we're going to stop our discussion here and regroup for another episode later on. So thank you so much, Cassandra, for your time, and look forward to continuing the discussion.
Perfect.
Thank you, Cassandra.
Thanks.